Solar panels and farms share space in a bunch of places on the planet. We've explored the subject before, noting that there are even farms where the solar panels are installed in such a way that farm tractors can pass underneath them. But that's where people meant for farming to continue alongside the panels. That was not the intention when Oregon State University installed new solar panels on open land near the campus in Corvallis. But there was plant growth around the panels, surprising the researchers, so they researched and found some things they did not expect. Chad Higgins is our guest. He's an associate professor in the Department of Biological and Ecological Engineering at Oregon State University. Dr. Higgins, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
So first of all, give me an idea of the general run of your research, because biological and ecological engineering alone sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so I personally study how water systems, energy systems, and food systems are connected. So looking at ways in which we can harvest net gains by engineering the intersection between energy, water, and food systems. And my department, Biological and Ecological Engineering, generally tries to engineer the human ecosystem interface for mutual benefits.
All right, just to make sure that you can get as much as you possibly can out of an existing system, or tweak it in such a way that you can get more.
Correct, yeah. Always trying to increase efficiencies, make things better.
There's a couple of terms we'll need help with here, because one of them appears in the title of your publication, but agrivoltaic means what?
So that's a term that came out of, I didn't make that up,
okay.
That came out of the scientific literature. That's essentially the buzzword for the dual use of land for both agricultural production and for energy production with solar panels.
All right, so we have talked about this before in the past on the program, but you know, things like crops and solar panels set up together, but you're pretty clear in your reporting on this. This was not your intention here, right?
That wasn't my intention, or it wasn't anybody's intention to start with. So I wasn't even involved in the decision to put the panels on campus. The sustainability office and some other folks worked to develop about 6 acres of solar panels on campus that feeds campus that energy. And that land was previously a sheep pasture, and there was no place to put the sheep, so they just kept the sheep there, and that was the beginning of it. What happened was I was just walking by with one of my colleagues one day, and we were looking at the adjacent pasture that wasn't, put solar panels on it, and looked at the one that it was, and there were some real clear differences in what was happening. So we started a project and monitored for 3 years what was going on.
What kinds of differences did you notice between the two different plots of land?
Well, there was just a real visible difference in the lushness, the greenness of the grass in certain areas. So this was late September when we first noticed this. And, you know, a normal pasture, if it's non-irrigated by then, it's brown, it's you know, a senesced for the winter. And underneath the panels in this instance, it was still lush. The sheep were hanging out under there, eating that grass. And it was just really apparent that there was pretty substantial differences there.
All right. So it actually looked better on the land with the panels.
It looked better on the land with the panels. Yep.
So you mentioned that the sheep stayed there. So it wasn't like you were spraying the land or using mechanical means to keep the plants under control other than having the sheep there.
They didn't change, as far as I know, and I talked to the sheep guys, they didn't change the sort of rotation of the sheep or anything. They just fenced off the solar panels and let the sheep at it.
You describe this particular piece of land as a place that often experiences water stress. So is that pretty much what you're talking about, that, you know, late in the season, if it's not irrigated, it looks kind of yellow and dry?
Oh, yeah. It's totally dry. There's no irrigation at all to this pasture, so usually by August, the grasses are dry and brown.
Do you get some of the drought tolerant stuff out there? You know, things like star thistle and things growing too.
We do have thistle. That's part of the story. We have thistle in the control pasture that wasn't that didn't have solar panels put on above it. But we actually lost the thistle. It stopped growing in the area that we put the solar panels above.
Wow, that's an indication that the soil moisture is pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's actually the mechanism by which all these changes happen. So when you take a little bit of light away from these plants, they grow actually a little slower, of course. But they grow in that slower growth rate. They're using water in a more efficient way. So they get more crop per drop, so to speak. And since they're using that water more efficiently, there's more soil banked, so more water banked in the soil that lasts a longer time. So when we actually measured the soil moisture, we found that there was available water to those plants underneath the solar panels all the way through the growing season, all the way into September.
Wow, I'm gonna use an analogy here that might not be apt, but I got cooking on the brain because Thanksgiving is coming up. But this is kind of like when you want something to cook a little lower and slower, you're sort of reducing the intensity of the energy scattered among the plants.
Yeah, that's a pretty apt analogy. I usually say it's kind of like a tortoise and hare race, where the open pasture, it grows as fast as it can, it uses all of its water as fast as it can, and then it's done for the year. Whereas under the panels, it goes slow. It's behind in the race in the beginning, but by the end of the season, there's actually a lot more pasture grass there underneath the panels.
We are talking about pasture grass growing around solar panels at an installation at Oregon State University in a way that really wasn't expected, but it led to research. And Chad Higgins and two colleagues published that research early this month, about the photovoltaic array at Oregon State University. Chad Higgins is in the Department of Biological and Ecological Engineering. He's an associate professor. You can join the discussion here on The Exchange. Your questions, your comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We already have an email from Brian, no town given. Wants to know if you had any observation on the impact of the solar installation on bird habitat.
I don't have any hard data on that, but I do know there was a stronger raptor presence, and that's because the soil moisture made the ground a little easier to dig. So we noticed there's a lot more moles and voles that were hanging out underneath the solar panels, and that brought in some raptors. But I didn't have any hard data on that, just walking out and looking, seeing what was going on.
So at what, you mentioned you weren't involved, Chad, at the beginning with the installation of the panels, but at what point did this turn from like, oh, that's interesting, to, geez, we should research this because there's something going on here that we didn't expect?
Yeah, so it was probably about 2 years after the installation that we actually noticed, visibly what was going on. And, just like any other installation, there's a plaque on the side of it that says, if you have questions, call this number. So I just called that number, and we had a couple meetings with the sustainability program at Oregon State, and then within a month we were out there installing sensors.
So what kind of sensors? Because I'm thinking you had to measure a lot of different things for this.
Yeah, so we put out some standard stuff. We put out instruments to measure the light intensity above and below the panels, just regular old meteorological equipment to measure temperature, wind speed, relative humidity, wind direction. We also did pretty extensive soil moisture measurement with a neutron probe. We did physical sampling of the grasses, so we actually harvested the grasses and dried them in an oven and weighed them. We pulled soil samples themselves and had them analyzed.
And I see that, quoting directly from your research, it says changes to the microclimatology, soil moisture, water usage, and biomass productivity due to the presence of solar panels were quantified. I guess I'm most interested in the, all of it, but microclimatology. So did you develop something of a microclimate under the solar panels?
There is a measurable change in, temperature and a little bit in humidity. They're statistically significant, but they're not huge. They're actually pretty subtle. The biggest change is, of course, in the light. The second biggest change is in the wind, actually. So and it would make perfect sense that there would be a very different passing winds there underneath the panels. The direction changed substantially and the magnitude reduced, of course.
So is the reduction of the wind partly part of the explanation for the fact that the soil did not dry out as much?
that is one of the factors that dries out plants, right? So if you reduce the wind, you reduce the evaporative potential of that microclimate on those crops. But the other one, I mean, all of the microclimatology influences the evaporation. The biggest factor is the incoming light. The second is what's called the vapor pressure deficit, which is a measure of the humidity.
So the kinds of grasses that were growing there, the kind that sheep like to eat, apparently, was this not something that had ever been experimented with in terms of limiting the light before? I mean, are these generally considered sunshine-loving plants?
A lot of them are sunshine-loving plants, and we actually saw Elnaz Hassan for the graduate student who did the measurements. She actually pulled samples and looked at the species diversity of the pasture mix, both in the undisturbed location and underneath the panels. And we did see a kind of remixing of the species as they adapted to the new conditions, where underneath the panels we got a more a mix that was more heavy in the barley families that are a little more tolerant to shading. And we lost some of the weeds that really liked the light, like a thistle wasn't growing there anymore.
But just to restate, there was no planting of any kind here, is that right?
No, there was no planting. There was no seeding. This was an established pasture, and they just put the panels over it, and the pasture adapted on its own.
Wow. Plants growing under solar panels, more or less by accident at Oregon State University, led to research by Chad Higgins and Elnaz Hassanpour Adeh and John S. Selker, published early this month. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the situation. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from John in Rogue River. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chad Higgins.
Hello. It's great work that you're doing. We've been working with about a half dozen different utility-scale solar companies to plant intentionally plant pollinator habitat under and around solar panels, and it's been a really great thing for native pollinators and managed honeybees. And to kind of speak to the previous email commenter's question about birds, is we're noticing a substantial increase in birds. Our theory is that it has to do with increased seed production and native insects that birds eat, and we would really love to collaborate with the university on some bird surveys and native plant surveys. It's a great model to actually increase pollinator habitat. Habitat loss has been one of the key drivers of pollinator loss, so I would just love to hear the speaker's comments on that, and I can listen off air.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. So, Chad, was there much monitoring of things like pollinators? Were there any on the site?
Thanks for the question, John. We didn't monitor pollinators or beneficial insects on this particular study, but I did get a small fund, and I have a student who is starting her research. Her name is Maggie Graham, and she's actually going to do insect surveys and native pollinator habitat underneath solar panels this summer. So we're actually going to broadcast some pollinator seed mixes underneath another solar array, and we're going to quantify and survey what the changes are. So I would love to even collaborate with you on that. You can find my email on the Oregon State webpage, and we can get you involved in that research if you want.
Yeah, John, thanks for the call on that, and feel free to reach out. Chad is easy to find on the Oregon State University website. We were talking about pollinators and the things that feed off them, and you mentioned the raptors. That's a really fascinating part here. So ultimately, the soil was moist enough to allow the burrowing rodents, it sounds like, to get into that area.
Yeah, our study has raised a lot more questions just from our observations in the field, so when we're doing soil moisture sampling, we have to actually get the shovel out and dig some pits to verify what's going on. And digging those pits, we see all kinds of differences. The worms were way bigger and juicier looking. I don't know. I would much rather use those for fishing bait than the ones that were out in the control pasture. There was a visibly larger amount of what I would call macrosystem ecology, from the insect populations to the little moles and then the snakes and raptors that fed on them. There's just a lot more action going on under the solar panels.
And again, Chad, no irrigation in this field, right? Just the
solar
panels?
Dry land.
Totally dry land. And the control fields, same kind of land, but no panels.
Identical land, same soil type, same management practice, same sheep grazing. It's in the same fenced area that the sheep graze on.
Any unusual features other than the panels that might explain the growth? Field watered nearby upslope, anything like that?
There is a little stream going by, Oak Creek. The north side of the road is the dairy research operation, so there's dairy cows on the other side of the road, and that's also a non-irrigated pasture for the cows. It's real typical patchy agriculture, diversified agricultural land.
All right, so nothing that no water coming from someplace else uphill that might explain this beyond the solar panels?
Nope. I couldn't find any other pathway of water into the place.
And I haven't asked directly about the soil moisture readings themselves. How much more moist was this soil than the control field, for example?
So that varies by the time of year. In the spring, they're pretty much the same because we've experienced our wonderful Oregon rains all winter and everything is just wet. And then we go from there being pretty much the same early spring to by the end of the season, let's see, it's about 40% soil moisture in the root zone and under the panels, and it's closer to 25% soil moisture in the control pasture.
All right, so that is a significant difference.
Yeah, very significant difference.
And the biomass that you mentioned, I should point out that the piece is called Remarkable Agrivoltaic Influence on Soil Moisture, Micrometeorology, and Water Use Efficiency. That's the title of the publication from November 1st that we're talking about with Chad Higgins. So the actual biomass of the plants, mm-hmm. how much more than grew elsewhere?
So we got 90% more grass by weight, under the solar panels than in the traditionally managed pasture with no solar panels. So nearly double, almost double, 90% more.
Wow. So this is over how many seasons of monitoring now?
We've done 3 seasons of monitoring now.
Mm-hmm. And as the have you added more measurements each season, or pretty much the same basic set of numbers from all three?
So we maintain the measurements that we've done year by year, but we're adding on extra components as we move forward. So this year I have an undergraduate student doing her honors thesis with me, and I had her take samples of the grass to run through a protein analysis to see if the nutrient or the nutritional value of the pasture grass for the sheep is different as well.
Again, Chad Higgins, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an associate professor in the Department of Biological and Ecological Engineering at Oregon State University. We're talking about putting solar panels on an unirrigated field and being surprised that the soil moisture was better and crops grew better. And you hear 90% more growth under the panels than in the control field. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So how do you build on the research now published? First of all, are you continuing to monitor what's going on out at the initial field?
Yep, I'm not giving up on that. I think there's some long-term questions that are really important. We can ask things like, does this continue year by year? Is there some diminishing returns? There's questions that I want to get at in terms of the carbon and nutrient cycle that's going on to support the plant growth. And those are much more long-term changes or slower changes, so you need a longer-term measurement to actually see the trajectory of that. So we're going to continue that. I am also trying to add functionality. So we talked about the pollinator study that's going to happen this summer. Last summer, we did a nutritional value of the crops. Also, next summer, we're going to start doing cropping trials with some, you've talked on your show about some purpose-built systems.
Right.
And we're going to try also to use what we've learned to optimize and try to engineer a purpose-built system that would essentially go in with the idea of managing the light to create beneficial microclimates for a specific crop. And we're going to figure out or try to figure out how you know, what's the geometry, what's the architecture, what's the spacing, the heights of the panels so that you can get the best possible climate for example, broccoli or bell peppers or small berries like blueberries. So we're starting those trials this summer as well.
Are the results likely to be different in an area with less ambient humidity? I'm looking at the amount of rainfall per year in Corvallis, around 39 inches, which is a little more than double, for example, what Medford gets in an average year. So I just wonder if the results might be very different in a place where it's drier longer.
Where it's drier longer, I think probably we'd see even more extreme differences. So in Medford, you probably would have to irrigate some to grow most crops out there. I know there's some dryland wheat up probably north of you. But as you manage the light, you manipulate the amount of water the crops need. And to the degree you do that, you can reduce the water that the crops need. But you can't go too far because the crops need light to grow as well, and you can't force them to grow so slow that they can't mature over the growing season. So there's an over-under, there's an optimization that we haven't quite figured out in terms of the precise shading you would need for each location that has its unique climate and water availability. But we're getting to the point where we're starting to write down equations and be able to model the system and design experiments.
Well, it's fascinating stuff to see that we can get growth under solar panels in fairly dry areas. Chad Higgins, Associate Professor in the Department of Biological and Ecological Engineering at Oregon State. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey.